We often think of peace as something we find, something out there, waiting for the right time, the right place, the right people. But the Stoics would tell you that peace isn't something you search for. It's something you build, internally, deliberately, and often, silently. Real peace doesn't come from a perfect life. It doesn't come from everything going your way. It comes from removing what doesn't serve you, what clutters the mind, what stirs the emotions, what keeps you from being fully present and grounded. We don't realize how often we give away our peace by overthinking, by reacting, by chasing, by holding on to things that should have been released long ago. But the truth is, peace doesn't enter a mind that's already full. The Stoics believed in subtraction more than addition. Not, what do I need to add to my life? But what do I need to let go of? What thoughts, habits, fears, and patterns are standing between you and the calm you're craving? In this episode, we'll explore 15 things you can eliminate, starting today, that will bring more stillness, clarity, and inner strength into your life. Each one is rooted in Stoic wisdom, and each one is a reminder that silence, simplicity, and self-awareness are not weaknesses. They're the foundation of power. If you want peace, stop trying to control everything around you and start removing what's destroying your stillness within. Let's begin. 1. Constant complaining. Focus on solutions, not problems. Complaining feels good for a moment. It gives us a sense of release, a way to vent, to express frustration. But over time, it becomes something else entirely. A habit, a mindset, a way of seeing the world that trains your brain to focus only on what's wrong. The Stoics didn't waste time complaining. They believed it was one of the fastest ways to weaken the mind and poison the soul. Why? Because when you complain, you give away your power. You shift your energy from action to helplessness. You speak about what's wrong without moving toward what's right. Marcus Aurelius, facing daily pressure as emperor, wars, betrayal, even plagues, had every excuse to complain. But instead, in his private reflections, he wrote, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." That wasn't optimism. That was discipline. A conscious refusal to waste energy on what couldn't be changed. The truth is, complaining rarely changes the situation. It just drains you. And worse, it reinforces the belief that you are a victim of your circumstances. Over time, this mindset becomes your lens. You stop seeing possibilities. You start expecting things to go wrong. But there's another way. When something goes wrong, don't complain. Observe. Ask, is this within my control? If not, can I accept it? If yes, what action can I take now? This is the Stoic path. It doesn't ignore pain or pretend everything is perfect. It simply redirects energy away from noise and toward clarity, away from blame and toward responsibility. And there's something powerful that happens when you stop complaining. You start seeing opportunities. You start thinking creatively. You become someone others trust. Not because you ignore problems, but because you focus on solutions. So catch yourself the next time you're about to complain about your job, your day, your relationships, even the weather, and instead, pause, breathe, ask, what can I do? And if there's nothing to do, then what can I learn to let go of? Because peace doesn't come from everything going your way. It comes from training yourself to rise above what doesn't. And complaining, it's just noise that keeps you from hearing the answer that's already waiting in the silence. 2. Comparing yourself to others. Your only true competition is yourself. There's a quiet kind of suffering that creeps in when you're constantly measuring your life against someone else's. You scroll through social media, you hear someone's success story, you watch people achieve things faster, louder, brighter than you, and something inside you whispers, "Why not me?" The Stoics warned us about this, because when you compare yourself to others, you abandon your own path. You stop focusing on your unique growth, your values, your rhythm, and instead, you begin living in someone else's shadow. Epictetus said, "If you want to improve, be content to be thought foolish and stupid." Why? Because real growth doesn't look glamorous. It's not made to impress others. It's made to align you with your highest self. And often that process is invisible to the world. Comparison turns your focus outward. It convinces you that worth is something you need to prove, that you're only as valuable as your achievements, your income, your recognition. But the Stoic response is simple and powerful. Your only task is to be better than the person you were yesterday. That's it. That's the race. And ironically, the moment you stop looking sideways, you start moving forward. Let's be honest, comparing yourself to others is addictive. It's easy, but it's also misleading. You see someone's highlight reel and compare it to your behind the scenes. You see their peak and forget they have valleys. You see what they've accomplished, but not what they've lost. And what that creates is a distorted mirror, one that always makes you feel behind, small, or not enough. But what if, instead of asking, "How do I measure up to them?" you asked, "Am I growing in the ways that matter to me?" What if you redefined success, not as being ahead of others, but as being aligned with your values, at peace with your choices, and proud of your effort? Because the person next to you isn't your competition. Their success doesn't take anything away from yours. Their path is theirs. Yours is yours. And trying to walk someone else's path will only leave you lost on your own. The Stoics would advise you to look inward, to turn your attention to what you can improve, your discipline, your character, your clarity. They'd remind you that greatness isn't measured in trophies or applause. It's measured in how consistently you choose to rise when no one's watching. And here's the quiet power in all of this. When you stop comparing, you start appreciating. You appreciate your progress. You appreciate your lessons. You even begin to celebrate others, not from insecurity, but from stillness. From the understanding that we're all walking different roads, and the only person you ever truly need to outperform is the person you used to be. 3. Seeking everyone's approval. You can't control what others think. There's a silent trap that most people fall into without even noticing. It's the need to be liked, to be validated, to be seen in a certain way by others. And the more you chase that approval, the more you give away your freedom, the freedom to live truthfully, boldly, and at peace with yourself. The Stoics warned us, if you live according to the applause of others, you will die with their silence. They understood something we forget in a world of likes, comments, and constant comparison. You can't control what other people think of you. And more importantly, you don't need to. Approval is fleeting. One day they admire you. The next day they misunderstand you. One group praises your honesty, while another criticizes your boldness. You bend yourself to fit in, to be accepted, and in doing so, you start to lose who you really are. But the Stoics offer a different way. Live by your values, not by other people's expectations. Let your actions be guided by what you know is right, not by how others might react. Because the truth is, trying to please everyone is a battle you will never win. The more you try to be everything to everyone, the more you become a stranger to yourself. Ask yourself honestly, How many decisions have I made just to avoid judgment? How many times have I stayed silent just to keep the peace? How often have I worn a mask to be accepted, only to feel more disconnected afterward? The Stoics would remind you that real peace begins the moment you stop performing for others and start living in alignment with your inner compass. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "It never ceases to amaze me. We all love ourselves more than other people, but care more about their opinion than our own." That line cuts deep, because it reveals how often we betray our own voice just to hear someone else's approval. But what if you didn't need that approval? What if you could release the burden of trying to be understood, liked, or accepted by everyone? What kind of energy would that free up? What kind of peace would that unlock? Living with integrity means choosing what's right, even when it's unpopular. It means speaking with honesty, even when it shakes the room. It means allowing people to misunderstand you, because your goal is not to be understood by everyone, but to be true to yourself. And yes, it's uncomfortable. Some people will walk away, some won't get it. But the ones who stay, the ones who see you clearly, those are the relationships built on truth, not performance. When you stop seeking approval, you begin to act from strength, not insecurity. You become harder to manipulate, harder to offend, harder to break, because you're no longer driven by the opinions of the crowd. You're driven by purpose, by clarity, by peace. So if you want to reclaim your life, start here. Stop explaining yourself to people who are committed to misunderstanding you. Stop waiting for permission. Stop needing to be liked. Live in such a way that your peace is not up for negotiation, because the moment you stop seeking approval, you begin to feel something far more powerful than being liked. You begin to feel free. 4. Fear of failure. Every mistake is a lesson to grow. Failure, even the word itself, carries weight. Disappointment, embarrassment, doubt. But what if the Stoics were right when they said that failure is not the enemy, it's the forge? Every time you avoid trying because you're afraid to fail, you deny yourself the very experience that would make you stronger. Failure isn't the opposite of success. It's part of it. It's the hard teacher. The mirror. The honest feedback that most people run from, but the Stoic embraces. We live in a culture that celebrates results, but hides the process. You see the achievement, not the setbacks. You hear the applause, not the silence that came before it. This illusion makes failure feel like shame, like weakness. But the Stoics saw it differently. Seneca wrote, "Difficulties strengthen the mind, as labor does the body." And failure, when faced directly, is one of life's most valuable difficulties. Why? Because it reveals who you are. It strips away illusion. It exposes what you don't yet know. And it invites you, if you're willing, to rise again, this time with more wisdom. But fear has a way of paralyzing us. It whispers, "What if they judge me? What if I'm not good enough? What if I try and still fail?" And the Stoic answer, "So what? So what if you fail? You learn, you adjust, you try again, with more precision, more clarity, more resilience. Fear only has power when you treat it like a wall, but in truth, it's a doorway. Walk through it once, and you realize it was never as solid as it seemed. And here's the deeper cost of fearing failure. You end up failing anyway, just in silence. You fail to grow. You fail to take chances. You fail to live fully. Because the greatest failure isn't falling short. It's staying still. The Stoics taught that courage isn't the absence of fear. It's action in spite of it. When you stop trying to avoid failure and instead use it as a guide, you unlock a mindset that can't be broken. because you no longer tie your worth to the outcome. You tie it to the effort, to the discipline, to the willingness to try again and again. So shift your question from, "What if I fail?" to, "What will I miss if I don't try?" Because regret weighs more than failure ever will. And remember, every person you admire has failed, not once, but many times. The difference is, they didn't let it define them. They used it. They built from it. So today, give yourself permission to fall, if it means moving forward. Make peace with imperfection. See mistakes not as proof of inadequacy, but as proof that you're engaged in something that matters. Because if you're not failing sometimes, you're not aiming high enough. And if you're growing from those failures, then you're not failing at all. 5. Holding grudges. Forgiveness frees your mind and energy. Grudges are heavy. They sit silently in the background of your mind, like a quiet tension you've learned to live with. The Stoics would say this weight is not just emotional, it's a theft. It steals your focus, your peace, your ability to live freely in the present. Holding on to resentment feels like a kind of control. You believe that by remembering the harm, by keeping the anger close, you're protecting yourself. But in truth, you're only anchoring yourself to a pain that has already passed. The person who hurt you may be long gone, or they may never fully understand what they did. But your thoughts, your energy, your inner freedom remain tied to that moment. And the question the Stoics would ask is, why? Epictetus said, "It is not he who reviles or strikes you who insults you, but your opinion that these things are insulting." In other words, it's not the act itself that continues to harm you, it's your attachment to it. It's the meaning you keep replaying, the wound you keep reopening. Letting go isn't weakness, it's wisdom. It's the recognition that you cannot build a peaceful life while clinging to the architecture of your anger. But let's be clear, forgiveness doesn't mean approval. It doesn't mean pretending it didn't happen or excusing harmful behavior. What it means is this: you are choosing to stop letting that moment own you. You're choosing to stop fueling it with your energy. You're choosing freedom over fixation. Think of it this way: every time you replay that betrayal, every time you rehearse that old argument, you are giving your peace away for free. And what do you get in return? Bitterness, tension, a sense of righteousness that slowly poisons your spirit. The Stoics teach detachment not out of coldness, but out of clarity. They remind us that you cannot control others. You can only control what you carry. And some things simply aren't worth carrying anymore. Ask yourself, what do I gain by holding on to this resentment? What am I afraid will happen if I let go? Who would I be without this anger? The answers to these questions are difficult, but liberating. Because the truth is, forgiveness isn't something you give to them. It's something you give to yourself. It clears the fog. It softens the edges. It returns you to your own life, your own path, unburdened by the past. There is a deeper kind of strength in choosing peace when you could choose revenge, in walking away without needing the last word, in healing, not for applause, but for your own sanity. When you forgive, you're not saying, "What happened was okay." You're saying, "What happened will no longer control how I live today." Let that be your freedom. Let that be your quiet revolution. Because life is too short to keep dragging old pain into new mornings. And your peace is too precious to spend it reliving stories that deserve to be left behind. 6. Fear of the future. Live in the present. The future is uncertain. We spend so much of our lives living in a moment that hasn't happened yet, thinking about what might go wrong, what might be lost, what might never come, and in doing so, we miss the one thing that is real, now. The Stoics were crystal clear on this. The future is not ours. It doesn't belong to us. It's a projection, a guess, a shadow on the wall, and yet we give it so much power, allowing our thoughts to spiral into anxiety, our sleep to be interrupted by unknowns, and our present joy to be stolen by fear of what hasn't even happened. Marcus Aurelius, perhaps the most powerful man of his time, still wrestled with this in his private reflections. He reminded himself again and again, "Never let the future disturb you. You will meet it, if you have to, with the same weapons of reason which today arm you against the present. Because that's the truth, you don't need to solve tomorrow today. You only need to live today well. And yet, most of us live with a future-focused tension, obsessing over what-ifs that stretch endlessly. What if I fail? What if I lose what I've worked for? What if something bad happens?" The Stoics would answer, "What if it does?" And then they'd ask, "Will fear make it easier? Will worry change the outcome?" Worry is a misuse of imagination. It gives you none of tomorrow's solutions, but all of its suffering in advance. And often the things you fear most never come to pass, but the toll they take on your peace, on your sleep, on your presence, that's real. Living in the present doesn't mean ignoring the future. It means acknowledging that you will be stronger tomorrow if you are fully present today. And when tomorrow comes, you'll meet it with the wisdom, strength, and clarity that you cultivated here, now. The Stoics also practiced something called premeditatio malorum, the mental rehearsal of worst-case scenarios. Not to live in fear, but to become familiar with uncertainty, to walk through fear calmly in the mind, so that if it ever arrives in life, you're not surprised, you're prepared. But preparation is different from obsession. It's thoughtful, not panicked. It's grounded in logic, not emotion. So if your mind keeps drifting into the future, pause. Ask, what is real right now? What can I touch, control, or influence today? Am I borrowing trouble, or am I building strength? Because there's a cost to constantly living in tomorrow. You miss the texture of your life today. You miss the small moments of beauty, of connection, of peace. And ironically, by fearing the future, you rob yourself of the very stability that would help you face it. The present is the only place you have power. It's where love happens, growth happens, clarity happens. And when you return to it, fully, with acceptance and courage, you become the kind of person the future doesn't scare anymore, because no matter what's coming, you're already grounded in what is. 7. Clinging to the past. You can't change it, but you can learn from it. The past is a strange thing. It's over, gone, untouchable. Yet for many people, it still runs their lives. Not because it holds power, but because they keep giving it power. The Stoics understood this deeply. They taught that while the past shapes us, it should never define us. Because if you spend your life clinging to what already happened, what you lost, what you regret, what hurt you, you slowly disconnect from what's still possible. Epictetus said, "Don't let the force of impression carry you away. Say to it, 'Wait a moment. Let me see what you are and what you represent. Let me test you.'" That's the essence of Stoic thinking. Observe the story, but don't become the story. The past is not your identity. It's information. It's a lesson. It's something to learn from, not something to live in. Yet many people live as if their past is carved into their skin. They replay old conversations. They carry guilt like a second shadow. they let wounds fester into bitterness, and in doing so, they limit who they are now to who they were then. But here's the truth the Stoics would offer you gently yet firmly. You can't change the past. You can only change your relationship to it. And that begins by asking, what am I still holding on to that no longer serves me? Is this memory guiding me or haunting me? If I let go of this story, who could I become? The goal isn't to forget, it's to transform. Because the past is not a prison, it's a teacher, and you don't learn by obsessing over the pain. You learn by extracting the wisdom, by saying, yes, that happened. But it doesn't have to control how I show up today. Forgiveness plays a role here too. Forgiving others, yes, but especially forgiving yourself, because the past is full of choices made with limited awareness. But you're not that person anymore. You've changed. You're changing. And every time you revisit the past with guilt, you're punishing a version of you that no longer exists. The Stoics would challenge you to focus your energy where it matters, on the present moment, because that's where your choices live. That's where healing happens. That's where you stop bleeding from wounds that were never given a chance to close. And when you finally release the grip on the past, something remarkable happens. Your hands are free to build the future. Your mind is clearer. Your heart is lighter. And you realize that peace isn't found in rewriting the story. It's found in no longer needing to. So let go, not with bitterness, not with denial, but with wisdom. Let the past be the soil you grew from, not the weight that holds you down. Because the more space you create within yourself, the more room you make for life to meet you, here, now, in the only place that ever truly exists. 8. Talking too much. Silence is wisdom and self-control. In a world where everyone is speaking, few are truly listening. Noise surrounds us. Opinions, arguments, updates, commentary. We are trained to fill silence with words, to respond quickly, to share constantly, as if being heard is more important than being understood. But the Stoics offer a different kind of wisdom, one that lives in quiet restraint, in the discipline of saying less, and in the rare strength of silence. Epictetus, who spent his life teaching others to master themselves, once said, "We have two ears and one mouth so that we can listen twice as much as we speak." It sounds simple, obvious even. Yet, how often do we reverse that equation? How often do we speak without thinking, interrupt instead of listening, react instead of observing? The Stoics saw speech not just as communication, but as a reflection of inner order. A person who speaks constantly is often trying to drown out their own discomfort. They're afraid of the pause, afraid of what stillness might reveal. But silence isn't emptiness. It's clarity. It's control. It's space for thought to unfold. When you talk too much, you give away your energy. You leak your intentions. You open yourself to misunderstandings, to misinterpretation. But when you choose your words carefully, when you let silence carry the weight that empty talk cannot, you build presence. And presence is power. Silence is not passive, it's active restraint. It's a choice to observe instead of react, to reflect instead of respond, to conserve instead of scatter. And that choice builds something rare in you: credibility, influence, inner peace. Ask yourself honestly, do I speak to express truth or just to be heard? Do I fill silence out of habit or do I allow space for meaning? What would happen if I paused more and spoke less? Because silence doesn't mean you're disengaged. Often it means you're watching more closely, listening more deeply, thinking more clearly. It gives you time to understand the situation before inserting yourself into it. It allows you to respond, not just with logic, but with wisdom. And perhaps most importantly, silence protects your inner world. It gives you space to process emotion before turning it into speech. It protects your relationships from careless words. It keeps your dignity intact when others lose theirs. In times of conflict, silence becomes a shield. In moments of tension, it becomes a bridge. In a noisy world, it becomes your sanctuary. But learning to be silent is hard. It requires humility to admit you don't always need to speak. It requires confidence to know that your presence carries weight, even without words. And it requires patience to trust that truth is often better served with fewer, clearer words. So if you seek peace, begin with quiet. Let your words carry weight by using fewer of them. Let your pauses speak louder than your opinions. And when you do choose to speak, make sure your words are necessary, honest, and aligned with your values. Because the wise are not always the ones who speak the most. They're often the ones who know when silence says it all. 9. Focusing on external things. True peace comes from within. Look around you. How much of your attention is directed outward, toward status, image, possessions, recognition? We're taught to believe that happiness is out there, just one promotion away, one purchase away, one compliment away. But the Stoics saw through this illusion. They believed and lived by the idea that peace is not found in what you own or how you're seen, but in who you are when everything else is stripped away. The problem with chasing external things is that they are always changing. They can be lost, taken, devalued. The moment your peace depends on something outside of you, it becomes fragile. And when you don't have control over the source of your peace, you don't have control over your life. Marcus Aurelius, Emperor of Rome, surrounded by luxury and power, wrote privately in his journal, "Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking." That line carries more truth than entire shelves of modern self-help, because real peace doesn't come from finally achieving something. It comes from finally letting go of the belief that you need anything more to be at peace. This doesn't mean you reject success or money or ambition. The Stoics didn't advocate poverty. They advocated detachment. Use what life gives you, but don't let your identity be tied to it. Enjoy what you have, but don't need it to feel whole. That's the difference between freedom and dependency. Think of your mind like a garden. If you spend all your time planting flowers in other people's yards, seeking approval, chasing trends, comparing lifestyles, your own garden is neglected. But if you turn inward, tend to your own soil, care for your values, nurture your inner clarity, something powerful grows. The Stoics would ask, are you chasing admiration or alignment? Do you feel peaceful when alone or only when praised? If everything external were taken away, who would you still be? These are difficult questions, but they lead you to something rare in this world, self-possession. A calm that doesn't rise and fall with fortune. A clarity that doesn't depend on being understood. A sense of meaning that isn't for sale. When you stop chasing things you can't control, you regain control over what really matters. Your character, your integrity, your presence. You no longer wait for life to get better before you can feel whole. You stop needing the world to validate what you already know in your soul. And slowly, you begin to realize that all the peace you were searching for out there was quietly waiting in here. So look within, not because the world is bad, but because your power has always lived inside you. The more attention you give to that truth, the more unshakable your peace becomes, no matter what the world gives or takes away. 10. Being emotionally reactive. Master your emotions before they master you. There are moments when life presses against you, hard, a harsh word, a sudden change, a disappointment you didn't expect, and before you can even think, emotion takes over. Your voice rises, your chest tightens, your reaction explodes before your wisdom has time to catch up. This is where most people live, at the mercy of their emotions. But the Stoics believed that if you want peace, power and clarity, you must learn to master your emotions, or they will master you. That doesn't mean suppressing how you feel. It doesn't mean pretending to be a robot or faking calm. What the Stoics practiced was emotional discipline, a quiet strength that allows you to feel everything fully, but still respond with intention. Seneca said it well, "No man is more unhappy than he who never faces adversity, for he is not permitted to prove himself." In other words, emotions, especially strong ones, are not obstacles. They're opportunities, opportunities to pause, to reflect, to choose. When you're emotionally reactive, you give up choice. You let anger speak for you. You let fear hold the pen. You let pain decide your tone. And in that moment, you're no longer acting. You're simply being pulled, tossed around by inner storms. But when you build the muscle of awareness, when you create space between the feeling and the action, you become something rare. You become grounded in the very moment where others lose themselves. It starts with a breath, one pause, one moment where you say, "What am I really feeling right now? Is this reaction helping or hurting me? Will I regret what I say or do in this state?" And slowly, through repetition, you create a pattern of clarity in moments that used to be chaos. You're no longer trapped by emotional highs or crushed by emotional lows. You begin to understand that emotions are messengers, not masters. They are signals, not sentences, and you don't have to obey every signal. Think of it this way. Anger might arrive to tell you something feels unjust, but it doesn't mean you have to explode. Anxiety might show up to point toward uncertainty, but it doesn't mean you need to panic. These emotions are guides, but you are the one who decides what to do with the information. Emotional reactivity keeps you stuck. Emotional mastery sets you free. It allows you to build better relationships, to make wiser decisions, to stay calm when others lose control, and most importantly, to act in alignment with who you want to be, not just how you feel in the moment. So the next time emotion surges, pause, feel it, acknowledge it, but don't let it drive, because your reaction is not just about now. It becomes part of your pattern. And the more you respond with strength, the more that strength becomes who you are. The Stoics didn't aim to be cold, they aimed to be clear. And clarity always begins with a pause. 11. Seeking revenge. The best response is indifference. When someone wrongs you, the first impulse is often fire. We want justice. We want them to feel what we felt. We imagine the words we'll say, the actions we'll take, the moment we get even. It feels powerful for a moment. But in truth, it's not strength, it's captivity. The Stoics believed that revenge is a chain. It links you to the person who hurt you. It ties your peace to their behavior. And as long as you remain in that cycle, waiting, plotting, fantasizing, you are no longer free. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The best revenge is not to be like your enemy. It's not about being passive or weak. It's about rising above, choosing peace over poison, choosing stillness over spite, Because when you seek revenge, you become what you despise. You let their actions dictate your own. You give them space, not just in your thoughts, but in your character. But indifference, that's different. Indifference is not the absence of emotion. It's the reclamation of power. It's looking at the person who tried to shake you and realizing they no longer get to move you. To the Stoic mind, justice is not personal, it's principled. If someone crosses a boundary, you respond with boundaries, not vengeance. If someone lies, you tell the truth. If someone disrespects you, you remain composed, because your behavior is yours. And the moment you let others pull you into their chaos, you've surrendered your discipline, your values, your peace. Ask yourself, will hurting them make me whole? Is this anger leading me forward or anchoring me to the past? If they no longer matter, why am I still giving them energy? The truth is, revenge keeps you emotionally tethered, but indifference sets you free. It says, you don't deserve my time. My pain doesn't define me. I'm moving on. That's not avoidance. That's power. That's the kind of calm that rattles those who expect you to fall apart. And perhaps the greatest irony, the people who seek revenge are often the ones still hurting, still needing something from the one who hurt them. But the Stoics would tell you, you don't need closure from others. You need clarity within yourself. You reclaim your story not by making them suffer, but by choosing to stop suffering yourself. So, if you've been holding on to revenge, let it go, not for them, but for you. Let their actions stay theirs. Let your peace speak louder than any retaliation ever could. Because in a world that teaches us to retaliate, choosing indifference is an act of radical strength. 12. Worrying about what you can't control. Focus on what's within your power. There's a kind of suffering that feels endless, not because the situation is unbearable, but because our thoughts keep circling it, replaying it, resisting it, trying again and again to change something that was never in our hands to begin with. This is the quiet war most people live in, the war against reality. And it's a war the Stoics refuse to fight. At the heart of Stoic philosophy lies one of its simplest and most liberating truths. There are things you can control, and there are things you cannot. Peace lives in knowing the difference. Epictetus made this distinction the foundation of his teaching. He said, "Happiness and freedom begin with a clear understanding of one principle. Some things are within our control, and some things are not." It sounds almost too simple, until you begin to truly live it. You can't control how others behave. You can't control the weather, the economy, or time. You can't control the past, and you certainly can't control the future. But here's what you do control. How you respond, what you choose to focus on, the thoughts you nourish, the actions you take, the meaning you assign to your experience. Most of our stress comes not from events themselves, but from our resistance to them. We want people to act differently. We want life to unfold on our timeline. We want certainty in a world that offers none. And so we suffer, not because the moment is painful, but because we demand that it be different. The Stoics would remind you, you may not control the wind, but you do control the sails. This isn't about giving up. It's about redirecting your energy toward what actually changes things. When you stop trying to move the immovable, you free up space to move yourself. You become lighter, more focused, more powerful. Ask yourself, is this thought helping me act or just making me anxious? Am I obsessing over something I can't touch? What small action can I take today, right now, that's within my power? Because no matter how bad the storm is, there is always something you can do. And even if it's just choosing your attitude, even if it's just controlling your breath, that choice is yours. And it's in that choice that your peace begins. The Stoics weren't emotionless. They simply refused to pour emotion into things they couldn't shape. They were deliberate in their focus, careful with their attention. And in doing so, they didn't just survive life, they mastered it. So, if you're tired of feeling overwhelmed, anxious, restless, return to this question. Is this within my control? If it is, act with clarity. If it's not, release it with grace. That's not indifference. That's wisdom. That's where real freedom begins. Because the moment you stop trying to control the uncontrollable, you start becoming unshakable. 13. Being a slave to desires. Moderation leads to balance and serenity. Desire isn't the enemy. It's part of being human. We desire comfort, love, recognition, pleasure, progress. These instincts, in their purest form, are not wrong. But when they become the master, when you're no longer choosing but chasing, then desire transforms into slavery. The Stoics saw unexamined desire as one of the greatest threats to inner peace. Not because desire is inherently evil, but because when left unchecked, it owns you. It whispers that who you are right now is not enough. That fulfillment is always one step ahead, one more purchase, one more achievement, one more experience away. And so the mind spins, restless, unsatisfied, always reaching, never still. Seneca, who lived among luxury yet warned against its pull, wrote, "It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more, that is poor." In other words, poverty is not about lack. It's about longing, the kind of longing that never ends because it feeds itself with the illusion that peace lives in acquisition. But the Stoic approach is radically different. It's not about denying yourself everything. It's about mastering the art of enough. They practiced voluntary discomfort, choosing at times to go without, to sleep on the floor, to wear simple clothes, to eat plain food, not out of punishment, but to remind themselves, I can live without what the world says I need. Because the moment you realize you can live without something, it loses its power over you. And that's where true freedom begins. Modern life, however, is built on the opposite idea. More is better. More success. More possessions. More attention. We scroll endlessly, shop impulsively, chase pleasure without pause, and yet so many feel empty. Not because they don't have enough, but because they've been taught that enough doesn't exist. Ask yourself honestly, what am I chasing that's stealing my peace? Do I desire this because it aligns with my values, or because the world told me to? What would it feel like to be content here, now, as I am? Desire is powerful, but if left unexamined, it becomes a fire that consumes everything it touches, your focus, your finances, your relationships, your self-worth. The Stoics believed in turning inward, in asking, am I choosing this desire, or is it choosing me? Because when you live with intention, when you pursue only what serves your soul, you stop being a slave. You become the master. And mastery doesn't mean having everything. It means needing less. It means walking through life lighter, freer, more in control of yourself than of things. So begin there, with one desire, one craving, one impulse. Question it, sit with it, see if it truly leads to peace, or if it only offers distraction. Because you will never find serenity in what's endless, you will only find it in what's enough. And when you choose moderation, not as limitation, but as liberation, you begin to experience a kind of stillness the world can't offer, a stillness that says, I have what I need. I am who I choose to be, and that is enough. 14. Fearing solitude, loneliness is an opportunity for self-discovery. There's a fear that lives beneath the surface of modern life, the fear of being alone, not just physically, but emotionally. The fear of sitting in silence without distraction. The fear of hearing your own thoughts with no one else around to drown them out. We fill every moment, music, messages, notifications, noise, constant connection, constant escape. But the Stoics would tell you, if you can't sit with yourself in stillness, if you can't enjoy your own company in solitude, then peace will always be out of reach. Seneca, in his letters, often wrote about the importance of solitude, not as isolation, but as cultivation. He believed that solitude wasn't something to run from, but a space where the soul could be examined, strengthened, and clarified. In his words, a man who is afraid to be alone should be afraid of himself. That's a powerful reflection. Because often, what we call boredom or loneliness is really discomfort with ourselves. When the distractions are gone, what remains? What thoughts do we avoid? What emotions do we silence? What truths are we not ready to face? Solitude doesn't cause that discomfort. It simply reveals it. And what the Stoics knew, and what few are willing to practice, is that within that discomfort lies the beginning of true self-mastery. When you learn to be alone, you stop needing constant validation. You stop chasing approval, applause, attention. You stop filling your calendar just to avoid the quiet. And slowly, you begin to discover something powerful. You already have everything you need within you. In solitude, you meet the parts of yourself that get lost in noise. You reconnect with your values. You ask deeper questions. You observe your thoughts without interruption. And in that space, you become more grounded, more deliberate, more alive. Ask yourself, what am I afraid I'll feel if I sit in silence? What might I learn if I stop running from my own mind? What part of me have I been neglecting by never being alone? This is not about avoiding people. It's about no longer avoiding yourself. Solitude, when embraced, becomes a kind of sharpening. You begin to see which of your desires are truly yours and which were planted by others. You begin to understand your patterns, your needs, your fears, and most importantly, you begin to trust yourself, because the one person you cannot run from is you. And when you make peace with that person, when you can sit in stillness and not flinch, you unlock a strength that few possess. The Stoics practiced solitude not as withdrawal, but as refinement. Like a blade in the fire, it was through solitude that they became sharper, quieter, and more certain of who they were. So don't fear the silence. Don't rush to fill the empty space. Sit in it. Stay a while. Get to know the sound of your own thoughts. Because when you learn to be content alone, you never again feel desperate to be accepted. You no longer fear rejection. You no longer chase people to avoid yourself. You simply carry your peace wherever you go. 15. Avoiding effort. Without discipline, there's no growth or inner peace. We all want peace, but most of us want it without the process. We want clarity without the confusion, strength without the struggle, mastery without the repetition. But the Stoics would remind you, you cannot reach peace by avoiding the path that builds it. Avoiding effort is seductive. It whispers, take the shortcut, rest later, do it tomorrow. And slowly, almost imperceptibly, your mind begins to weaken. Your will softens. The space between who you are and who you could be widens. Marcus Aurelius, who faced war, sickness, and the weight of an empire, still rose early each day to write in his journal, to reflect, to prepare his mind. Why? Because he knew that if you don't train your character daily, life will train it for you, and not kindly. Effort isn't just physical, it's spiritual. It's the discipline of choosing what's right over what's easy. Of showing up when motivation is gone. Of keeping your word to yourself, even when no one's watching. Without effort, peace becomes fragile. Because peace without strength is an illusion. It's comfort, not resilience. And the moment life tests you, and it always will, you crumble. Ask yourself, where have I been choosing ease over growth? What difficult thing have I been postponing, hoping peace will come on its own? What would my life look like if I honored effort as the doorway to everything I truly want? The Stoics never promised ease. They promised purpose, and purpose requires engagement. It demands that you step into discomfort willingly, not because you love pain, but because you love who you become through it. Avoiding effort is not self-care, it's self-abandonment. It's postponing the version of you that is stronger, calmer, clearer. The version that doesn't just survive adversity, but uses it, learns from it, transforms through it. Because here's the deeper truth, the peace you seek is built through effort, through the discipline of the morning routine, through the habit of honest reflection, through the decision to do the harder thing day after day until it becomes who you are. And when you do this long enough, something profound happens. You don't just feel more peaceful, you become unshakable. Not because life is easier, but because you are stronger. So if you're tired of chaos, start with effort. If you want peace, earn it in the way you live. Show up with discipline, with integrity, with a willingness to do what most won't. Because peace, real peace, isn't found in the absence of effort. It's found in the aftermath of it, in knowing that you didn't take the easy road. You took the honest one. Peace isn't given, it's earned. It's not the absence of chaos. It's the presence of clarity in the middle of it. You don't find peace by wishing the world would change. You find peace by changing what the world cannot take from you. Your mindset, your choices, your discipline. The Stoics never chased comfort. They built strength. And from that strength came stillness. Not a stillness that avoids life, but one that moves through it with grace, with courage, with control. If you want real peace, don't look for it in possessions. Don't wait for it in perfect conditions. Don't expect it from others. Instead, remove what disturbs it. Let go of comparison. Surrender the need for control. Release old grudges. Step away from empty desires. Face silence. Embrace effort. And when you do, you'll begin to feel something different. A steadiness. A quiet confidence, a presence that doesn't depend on noise or approval or success. You'll stop chasing and start living. Because peace isn't a destination. It's a decision, repeated moment by moment, breath by breath. And that decision is yours to make, starting now.